ॐ नमो ब्रह्मादिभ्यो ब्रह्म विद्या संप्रदाय कर्तृप्रो वंशर्षिभ्यो महद्भ्यो नमो गुरुभ्यः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानां हालयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पारं शंकरं लोकशंकरं सदाशिवसमारंभां शंकराचार्यमध्यमां अस्मराचार्यपर्यन्तां वंदे गुरुपरंपरां शंकरं शंकराचार्यं केशवं बारारायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वंदे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः सर्ववेदान्तसिद्धान्तगोचरं तमगोचरं गोविन्दं परमानन्दं सद्गुरुं प्रणतोऽस्म्यहम्। ॐ गुड्, वेलकम बैक। We have the all the lights in back should be turned on. It's a little dark in back. Yeah, thank you. All right. Good. I hope that before you come to class that you're doing what we discussed before. I suggest that you get, I give you a number of translations made available to you. And I'm hoping that you're reading those translations before coming to class so that the context is clear in your mind. That way we can make our way back into the, there's a whole week gap. Usually when texts like this are studied, they're studied in daily classes. So from one day to the next, you don't lose much connection. But we meet just once a week. So in order to make that connection work, I highly encourage you, get one of the translations. They're on our website. Make sure you read the passage before and after where we are in the text. That way you'll be in great shape for each class. Okay. At the end of the prior class, we had this. We began this important discussion about upadhi. Upadhi is one of those words that is virtually untranslatable in English. The closest translation that comes is conditioning adjunct, but you need a translation for the translation. Conditioning adjunct is not much help. And we saw here in the last line, swa ajnanataha upadhihi atmanaha. Our context, of course, is talking about the sukshma sharira, subtle body. And you might remember that this is in the context of answering the first of the students' questions. I think there was a series of, seven questions. And the first of those questions was about anatma. And we said that was a surprisingly important topic because, actually, let me put it in different terms. What is the source of your misery, atma or anatma? Right? So anatma is the source of our difficulty, of our trouble, of our suffering. So we had better understand what we're up against. So our opening discussion then is about anatma. And in that discussion of anatma, we've already concluded our study of the sthula sharira, physical body, and then we began the sukshma sharira, subtle body, which we defined in the verse before this as a whole collection of faculties that we have, including our powers, our karmendriyas, powers of grasping, walking, talking, etc., jnanendriyas, powers of sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch, the prana, the life force that enlivens our body, all of our mental faculties. All of that collectively is referred to as sukshma sharira. And here, it is very importantly, it is called atmanaha for you, for your true self. It is an upadhi. Ajnanataha, due to ignorance, it is an upadhi. So just to pick up the thread at the end of the last class, and then we'll move on. We said that an upadhi is that which causes something to appear as other than what it is. And specifically, an attribute of the upadhi is superimposed on something else. The orangeness of the cloth is superimposed on the clear crystal. There's not a trace of orangeness in the crystal, yet you experience orangeness. Due to the proximity of the cloth, the orangeness seems to rub off on the crystal, but in fact doesn't. Proximity is a key. If the crystal is far away from the orange cloth, no problem. But due to proximity between the upadhi and the object, the attribute of the upadhi gets superimposed. Now, who cares if it's a clear crystal or orange crystal? That doesn't have any particular consequence for us. But what we're up against is the proximity between the sukshma sharira and you, the conscious being. What's the distance? You can't measure it in centimeters. There's no distance. If there's no distance, what do you think are the chances for this kind of superimposition to be taking place? It does. And let's just go through we began this at the end of the last class. Let's do it a little bit more thoroughly now, because this is such an important topic. All the various aspects of the sukshma sharira, each one of them become an upadhi for atma, which means all of the problems associated with your subtle body get superimposed on you. And let's be very specific now. So we said subtle body included the karmendriyas, powers of grasping, talking, walking. How about this? Someone who can't walk, that person might say, I am lame. I am handicapped. I am, the proper word nowadays, I am disabled. Or even, if you want to be more politically correct, I am differently abled is a term that they'll use. Nice, that's nice. Okay. I'm trying to put a positive spin on it. But none of those words really sound positive, do they? Look at the difference, though. The fact is that the legs don't work. I'm okay. These silly legs don't work. That's a very different perspective from them saying, I am lame, I am handicapped. If we recognize that a self-label like that, I am handicapped, is harmful, well, why the label? The dysfunction doesn't belong to you. The dysfunction belongs to the legs or to the powers that make the legs move. So why own a problem that doesn't belong to you? This is the problem of superimposition. This is a problem caused by the upadhi. So because the power of walking is part of the sukshma sharira, any difficulties with that aspect of the sukshma sharira get superimposed on you, the conscious being, and it becomes your problem. Again, I'm okay, the legs don't work. That's a very healthy, realistic, and Vedantic perspective. Move on. How about the Gyanendriyas? Powers of seeing, hearing. I am blind. I'm not blind. These eyes don't work. You know, someone who is blind, they need not say, I'm blind. They need not think or conclude, I am blind, because who they are, of course, is that conscious being, the witness of all the mental activities. It's the eyes that don't work, that faculty that doesn't work. But notice the blindness that belongs to the faculty of sight gets superimposed on Atma. That's why that sukshma sharira with all of its faculties is anupadhi atmanaha. Atmanaha means for the Atma, for the true self. So Gyanendriyas, prana. Well, I think nowadays everyone, without exception, everyone says this at least once a day. I'm so tired. You all say that because you all are running around like crazy for 16 hours a day and not getting enough sleep. That happens to many, many people. So therefore, it's natural that someone says, I am tired. Well, when you label yourself as tired, is that really helpful? There's a judgment that goes along with it. I'm tired means I'm old, I'm useless, it's nothing. You're not tired. You're the one who knows the tiredness of the body, mind, sense complex. That tiredness could be associated with prana. So the tiredness of the prana, due to its proximity to Atma, the tiredness which belongs to prana gets superimposed on you. A problem which belongs to your prana becomes your problem. You label yourself, I'm so tired. What a difference it would make. It does make it. This is not, what did they say, splitting hairs or some kind of verbal sophistry. People like these fancy words. We're not playing with words. This is not playing with language. These are radically different perspectives. Look at the impact it can have. If you say, I am tired, it's a judgment about yourself. If you say, this body is tired, it's a statement of fact. One is a negative judgment, I am tired. The other is a statement of fact, this body is tired. The negative judgment can pull you down emotionally and actually get involved with other issues, other problems. A statement of fact is just a fact. Or as my guru likes to say it, it's not a problem, it's a situation. But we have this knack, not a good one, a knack of turning all of our situations into problems. Have you noticed that? We do that. Whatever is the situation, it's my problem. And then it becomes a weight upon us. Okay, let's finish off this introduction. So we did karmendriyas, jnanendriyas, prana. How about all the mental faculties? We spent some time at the end of the last class talking about sadness. I am sad. I am depressed. I am anxious. I am this. All of these mental traits that belong to your mind, they don't belong to you. If you're sad, how obvious can it be? If you're sad, do you know you're sad? Of course. Do you know the presence of sadness? Yes. Where is that sadness? In your mind. You know the presence of sadness in your mind. So to whom does that sadness belong? Isn't that obvious? But again, we have this knack. We turn that situation into a problem. We superimpose the sadness that belongs to the mind. We superimpose it on the conscious being which we are. And therefore it becomes my problem. I am sad. Sadness is present in the mind as a fact. I am sad is a judgment born of ignorance. Ajnanataha. And what Vedanta addresses is all of these errors we make. You might just one last comment before we move on now. We chop up this sukshma sharira into so many elements. We analyze it in great deal. Why? Because for each one of these elements, an error, an erroneous judgment is possible. With regard to each of our karmendriyas, with regard to each of our jnanendriyas, our prana, all our mental faculties, with regard to each and every one of these, we can make a mistake. So in Vedanta, we take each one of those mistakes, we dismiss them, and we will continue to do them as we go through our text. Okay, that's a good way just to tie up the last class and lead us on to the next part. We're still talking about the sukshma sharira. Swapne bhavat yasya vibhaktyavasta. Swapne bhavat yasya vibhaktyavasta. Swamatra sheshena vibhati yatra. Swamatra. Okay. Vibhakti. Avastha swapna bhavati asya for that subtle body, which is what we're talking about, for that sukshma sharira. For the sukshma sharira, there is a vibhakti avastha, a particular avastha, a particular state of experience. And just to, we need to get a little bit of the big picture here. We said state of experience, avastha is a word that we use. And we frequently talk of three avastas, three states of experience. I'll use all English words for now. Waking, dream, and sleep. If you want the Sanskrit, jagrat, swapna, and sushupti. Now, turns out there's an important connection between these three avastas, the three states of experience. By the way, there's no fourth. That's it. You're either waking, dreaming, or asleep. Then everyone likes to ask, Swamiji, what about samadhi? Okay. During samadhi, are you asleep? No. During samadhi, are you dreaming? No. Then what's left? Hopefully you're awake. I hope you're awake. If you're not awake, it's not samadhi. That's the rule. So there is no fourth. These three encompass all of our experiences in life. Whatever experience we have will fall into one or the other of these categories. Now, we started seeing this previously when we talked about the sthula sharira. For the sthula sharira, physical body, there was also a vibhakti avastha, a particular state of experience that the physical body was associated with, and that was the waking state. So the sthula sharira has a special relationship with the waking state because it's only in the waking state that you even know that you have a physical body. You experience the waking, you experience your sthula sharira, physical body, only in a waking state. You do not experience it in the dream and sleep state. So that's why the sthula sharira is for the sthula sharira, the vibhakti avastha, the particular state of experience it's associated with, is the waking state, jagrat avastha. Here, we're dealing now with the sukshma sharira, asya, for the subtle body, the vibhakti avastha, the particular state of experience, swapnaha bhavati. Swapna, the dream state, is the particular state of experience associated with the sukshma sharira. Why sukshma sharira? In fact, it explains. Swamatra sheshena vibhati yatra. Yatra, in that condition, in dream, swamatra sheshena vibhati. Swamatra, it alone appears. Swamatra sheshena, without anything else. So in a dream, your subtle body is present. By the way, can you see and hear things in a dream? Can you walk and talk in a dream? Yeah. Not physically, but in our minds, we have those faculties associated with the subtle body. So for that reason, we say that the subtle body is the is associated then, or the other way around, we should say that the dream state, swapna avastha, is associated with the subtle body. All right. What difference does it make? What we're after is to get a grasp. What do we mean by subtle body? In the dream state, you can have all kinds of experiences. Those experiences take place because of your subtle body. In the absence of subtle body includes all our mental faculties. In the absence of subtle body, there would be no dream. You would have an experience of deep sleep. And a little later in this class, we will come to the third of the three states of experience, sushupti, which means dreamless sleep. And you can figure out, actually, you may not be aware of this terminology, but I'll just give it to you. It's associated with the Karana Sharira, causal body, which will be our next topic. We're not ready for that yet, but since we've got the chart up on the board, we might as well fill out the chart. We'll see this later in this class, that the Vibhakti Avastha, the particular state of experience for the Karana Sharira, causal body, is the state of deep sleep, Sushupti. What is a causal body? We will have to discuss. We're not ready for that discussion yet. Okay. Now, next verse is a particularly important one here. Sarvavya pratikaranam lingam. Sarvavya pratikaranam lingam. Idam syachidatmanah pumsaha. Idam syachidatmanah pumsaha. Vasyadikamiva takshnaha, vasyadikamiva takshnaha, te naivatma bhavatya sangoyam, te naivatma bhavatya sangoyam. Sarva vyapratikaranam idam lingam, idam lingam, idam this. Lingam, in the prior class, linga sharira, we saw, as a synonym for sukshma sharira. Linga sharira means sukshma sharira. So idam lingam, this subtle body is sarva vyapratikaranam. It is the karana, the cause or agent, instrument. Instrument is a better translation. It is the instrument for sarva vyaprati. Vyaprati means any activity. Sarva vyaprati, for all activity, the sukshma sharira is the karanam, is the cause. It's the cause, syat, it is the cause. Chiratmanaha pumsaha. Pumsaha for a person, for the essence of a person who is chiratma, the conscious self, the conscious being. Chiratmanaha pumsaha, for the conscious being, which is the essence of who you are, it is the subtle body, idam lingam, that is sarva vyapratikaranam, that is the cause for all activity. The cause or agent for all activity. Now this is something you may not really think about. Who is the agent of activity? In Sanskrit, we use the word karta. Karta means agent of activity. Who is the karta? You say, I am. Okay. You decided to come to class this evening. You've heard me give this example before, many of you. You decided to come to class. Who decides to come to class? Who decides? Who is the agent who made that decision and initiated the action of coming here to class? Is it Chidatma, the conscious self? Wait a minute. A decision-making process took place. Were you aware of that decision-making process or not? You're aware of the decision-making process. The decision-making process that takes place in your buddhi, which is part of your sukshma sharira, the decision-making process took place in your subtle body. It was known to you, the conscious being, chidatma. So now I can ask a question again. Who is the karta? Who is the one who decided to come here to class? The correct answer is not me. That's the correct answer. I didn't decide. My mind decided. It's absolutely true. Your mind, what is the term they use? You know how they talk in the technological world, they talk about hardware and software? They call this one wetware. They use that term, wetware. Your wetware, your organic computer, 2.5 pounds of stuff, neurons and all of that, white matter and gray matter. That 2.5 pounds of stuff hosted a process that decided that you're going to come here to class. Now you may say, but Swamiji, I felt like I came to class. Exactly. Part of what takes place in your wetware is a process. By the way, software people will like that language. There are many process. Process means like a small computer program. Like when you're running, pardon me for a little bit of an analogy here, okay. When you're using your computer, it's actually doing several things at once. You may not even know it, but your computer is doing several things at once. Even if you're using a word processor, it might be checking your email at the same time, and it may be doing several other things at the same time. You're not even aware of it. It does a lot of things more or less simultaneously. Absolutely, your wetware does that. Part of your wetware is involved in this process of decision-making, evaluating, oh, is it worth going to class? Oh, is it too cold out? You know, you go through this decision-making process, a decision tree. If any of our IT people are out here, they'll like this language, decision tree, all the branches. You figure out what is the right thing to do. That's one process, is the decision-making process. Another process is what our computer people would call an executive. The executive is a part of the computer program that's kind of in charge. It's a part of the computer program that it's in charge, but it's still part of the computer program. It's still a computer program. You think you're in charge at the keyboard? Forget it. There is, in your computer, a program that's in charge. If you think you're in charge of the computer by what you push at the keyboard, how often does it happen that the computer ignores what you're doing at the keyboard? It doesn't care. Who's in charge? Not you. The executive program in the computer. It is a computer program that decides what the computer is going to do. Got it? A computer program that decides what the computer is going to do. That, by analogy, that's your ego, ahankara, the executive. So, who decided to come to class? This decision-making process is part of your buddhi, subtle body. The ego, ahankara, the executive process is part of your buddhi, sukshma sharira. So, as I said, you did not choose to come to class. You as Satchidananda Atma, you as Chidatma, the term that comes here, as a conscious being, Chidatma, you did not choose. Chidatma does nothing. Does it mean it's optional? Chidatma is consciousness. If you're unconscious, could you make a decision to come to the class? If you're unconscious, you don't exist. The essence of your existence is consciousness. So don't think that Chidatma is somehow an optional thing. Okay. But that Chidatma, that consciousness, is not a karta, is not an agent of action. The agent of action, the karta, is associated with your subtle body. Let's continue. It gives a metaphor here. Vasyadikam eva takshnaha. Takshan is a word. More common form is takshaka. Takshaka is someone who carves wood. Takshaka. Takshak. Here, takshan. Takshnaha, for that wood carver, the subtle body is vasi adikam eva. It is eva, like a vasi, etc. Vasi is a name for this tool, this cutting tool or chopping tool. Yeah, this chopping tool. It's got a sharp blade on it, like a hammer with a sharp blade on it. So they go on cutting and carving with that thing that's called a vasi. So vasi adi, etc. So vasyadikam takshnaha. It's like the vasi is the main tool used by the carpenter. A carpenter has a tool. It is a tool used by the carpenter. The metaphor is your subtle body is like a tool. That's really true, isn't it? your subtle body really is a tool. If you want to walk, you may not even know all the details of this. If you want to walk, your brain sends commands to your feet and legs, go, move. And they go, they move. It's like a robot. It's all nerves and muscles. So commands are sent to your legs and feet, and you walk. Commands are sent to your hands, they grasp. Commands are sent to your mouth and tongue, you talk, etc. These are all tools. Obviously, your sense organs, sight, hearing, smell, etc. They're tools. They're used by you. They're in your command. They're in your grasp. Similarly, all the mental faculties. I think this we experience quite a bit, that our mental faculties comprise a tool that we employ, that we use. Okay. There's a defect in this metaphor. Every metaphor has a defect, right? By definition, every metaphor has a defect. In Sanskrit, we call them drishtanta. There's no such thing as a perfect drishtanta. Every drishtanta, every metaphor has a defect. If it didn't have a defect, it wouldn't be a metaphor, it would be the actual thing. So the fact that it's not the actual thing, but something that represents any representation is not going to be perfect. Every drishtanta will have a defect. What is the defect of this drishtanta? It says that the subtle body is a tool for Atma, just like the tool, the vasi. The vasi is a tool for the carpenter. What's the defect in that metaphor? Can you pick it out? Subtle body is a tool for Atma. So tool relates to subtle body. That part's fine. But here, carpenter relates to Atma in the metaphor. The carpenter is the one deciding to use the tool. Wait a minute. The carpenter is a karta, is the agent of action. That's the limitation of the metaphor. So here, the takshaka, the carpenter, doesn't really represent Atma, can't represent Atma, because the carpenter is a karta. Atma is not a karta. Therefore, the takshaka, the carpenter, must represent your ego and not Atma. Very important. Do you see, though, that metaphors are used knowing they're defective, and we better be smart enough to figure out what the defects of those metaphors are, or we can make a mistake. But it does, the last part of the verse makes it more clear. It would prevent you from making a mistake here. Tena, because of that relationship between instrument and the wielder of the instrument, tena, for that reason, eva, indeed, atma bhavati, atma is, I am atma, you have to connect I am atma, this atma, bhavati, is asangaha, unconnected. Unconnected. What does it mean? Your consciousness is not connected in an essential way with your subtle body. Even as, and here the metaphor works, the carpenter was using a tool. Here, let me get some prop. So the carpenter is using a tool. But when the carpenter is done with the tool, the carpenter can put the tool down. The carpenter is not essentially connected to the tool. That's what asanga means here. Not connected, not joined. Different. And in the same way, Atma is detached. It is independent of your subtle body. Better way to put it, I'll try this. Our carpenter is using the tool. The tool gets dull. Any tool will get dull. Did the carpenter get dull? the dullness of the tool doesn't affect the carpenter. The carpenter is a sangha. Unconnected is what a sangha means, unconnected. But we could then extend the meaning unaffected. A sangha does not mean unaffected. A sangha means not connected. But by extension, we can get that meaning. The tool gets dull, the carpenter is unaffected. Anything happens to your subtle body, Satchidananda Atma, I am Atma, Asangaha, absolutely unaffected. And this, just before we move on to the next verse, this is not something for intellectual appreciation, nor is it something to be believed. First of all, to intellectually appreciate it, we've discussed this before, to have an intellectual grasp of these teachings means nothing. You know, if you want to teach philosophy in a college, maybe it'll have some value. Other than that, it won't have any value at all. Similarly, if you merely believe that your consciousness is unaffected by the subtle body, belief is equally useless. This is a truth you have to discover about yourself. That's what Vedanta is about. Vedanta is not some kind of intellectual inquiry, nor is Vedanta telling you what you should and should not believe. Vedantic teachings guide you so that you can personally discover something about yourself, which is crucial, which is important. You have to make that discovery. Earlier in the text, we saw that the teacher can't do it for you. No guru. No guru and no shastra, scripture, can do it for you. You have to make the discovery. What is the discovery you have to make? You have to discover how your consciousness is utterly unaffected by what happens in your body, what happens to your karmendriyas, what happens to your gnanendriyas, what happens to your prana, and most importantly, what happens to your mind. What happens in your mind doesn't affect you one iota. Just like when the tool is dull, the carpenter is not affected, in the same way. Whatever happens to your mind doesn't affect you. I am Atma, this Atma is Asangaha. Unconnected, unaffected, and this has to be discovered. By the way, meditation is an important process, important part of that process of discovery. Okay. We're going to talk a whole lot more about Atma coming up. I don't want to get too far into it right now. We're already talking about Atma being a sangha, being unaffected by anything. The next question, which will come after several more verses, is Atma, right? We're still finishing up the question about Anatma, several more verses to go. Karana Sharira, we have to discuss. But after we're done with that, then the next one we'll be talking about is Atma. So we have to finish the anatma. We've already done the stula sharira. We just now have finished the sukshma sharira with this verse. What comes next? Karana sharira. Karana sharira, causal body. I can't but share with you this funny joke. When I was a young student starting to study this stuff for the first time, I didn't know Sanskrit well in those days, like in the late 70s and early 1980s when I began. And I used to get these books published in India in English. And one thing that I think we all know is that some of these books are not very carefully edited. And so in several books, I kept seeing this discussion of physical body, and then there was the gross body. Now, first problem is gross in American English has a different meaning. So that was the first problem. Physical body I could understand. Instead of physical body, they used the term gross body. That was it. So in those books, it's the gross body and subtle body. Gross body, again, American-English problem. But then the bigger problem was when you came to Karana Sharira, which they sometimes would use the word not causal body, but casual body. Have you seen books? I've seen, and not just in one or two books. I saw that again and again and again. Casual body. And I'm starting to wonder, what is this casual body? I mean, you know, already Vedanta can be confusing. We don't need help. Casual body. So, with that introduction, we now begin our discussion of the casual body. We have three verses. We'll start. Avyaktanamni paramesha shaktihi. Avyaktanamni paramesha. Anadya vidya trigunatmika para. Anadya vidya trigunat. Karyanumeya sudhyaiva maya. Karyanumeya sudhyaiva maya. Yaya jagat sarvamidam prasuyate. Yaya jagat sarvamidam prasu. The starting point here might catch you a little bit off guard, because it doesn't begin by talking about karana sharira, causal body. It begins by talking about maya. Huh? How do you get from here to there? It seems on the surface to be an almost entirely unconnected subject matter. If we're talking about the individual person, the physical body, sthula sharira, sukshma sharira, subtle body, you'd think that the next verse would be on the karana sharira. But this verse is all about maya. Maya is that yaya by which, look at the end. Maya is yaya, that by which jagat idam sarvam, idam, this sarvam, entire jagat, this entire world, prasuyate, is created, is born, is generated. That which creates the world, that by which the entire world is created. Wait a minute. How did we suddenly start talking about the world and how the world got connected? Why aren't we talking about karana sharira? We are in a different way. Here's the deal. Karana means what? Not casual, causal. Cause. And cause means cause. The causal body is a cause for your existence as an individual person. That's what causal body means. Causal body is a cause for the sthula and sukshma sharira. Cause means cause, doesn't have any other meaning. So now, we want to understand this cause. We want to understand what is the cause for your existence as an individual being. Tell me, the cause for your existence and the cause for my existence would be the same or different? Same. The cause for your existence and the cause for my existence and the cause for the existence of the entire world would be different or the same. Same. The cause for the world is a cause for you. Are you not part of the world? We're talking about you as an individual person right now. You as an individual person are part of the world. Therefore, it's absolutely reasonable to say that the cause for you is not different than the cause for the world. What is the cause for you? In Sanskrit, we call karana sharira. The cause for the world, in Sanskrit, we call maya. And that's why we begin here talking about maya. We'll come to karana sharira in two more verses, but we start by understanding what is maya. First, we understand the cause for everything, the world. Then we narrow down and find out what is the cause for you as an individual being. Okay, what is this maya? As we saw, it is that yaya by which jagat sarvam idam, this entire world, prasuyate, that by which it is created. All right. Now, you might be wondering, wait a minute, isn't Brahman the source of everything? Brahman is a cause for everything. Brahman is, after all, Brahman is it. Brahman is the term you've used, you've heard me use the translation. Brahman is the reality because of which everything exists. That's a good definition. Brahman is the reality because of which everything exists, which may lead us then to conclude that that Brahman must be the cause for the world. It's not. Brahman is not the cause for the world. Notice the definition. Brahman is a reality because of which the world exists. But Brahman does not have a cause-effect relationship with the world. Why? This is a little technical, but we have to deal with this. If to have a cause-effect relationship, cause-effect relationships are part of the world, right? Cause-effect relationships exist only in the world. If you could transport yourself outside of the universe, imagine that the universe started with this big bang and still expanding. So what we call world is what's within that bubble of the expanding big bang. If you were to go outside of that bubble, you would be outside the universe. The laws of the universe exist within the universe. Outside of the laws, outside of the bubble of the universe, there are no laws of the universe. No cause and effect. Cause and effect exists within the bubble of universe. Cause and effect does not exist outside of the bubble of universe. If Brahman were the cause for the world, that Brahman would be in the universe and not beyond the universe. But that's not at all our concept of Brahman. We don't say Brahman is one of the things in the world. In the world are many things, there are trees, there are houses, sun, moon, stars, etc. And there's one Brahman. No. We give Brahman this absolutely unique status as being the fundamental reality because of which everything exists. We use the Sanskrit term adhishtana, in English, substratum. The substratum for the universe. Something more fundamental than universe. So, in Advaita Vedanta, it's absolutely rejected that Brahman is the cause for the universe. And there's a lot of arguments for this. It gets a little obscure, and I don't want to go too far into this, but we need a little bit, so bear with me. To be a cause, actually we'll connect it to the prior verse. To be a cause, to be a creator is to be an agent, isn't it? Karta? I'm going to create. Well, if you're going to create something, aren't you the agent of creation? You are a karta. Well, in a prior verse, we already discussed that Atma is not a karta. Atma is the conscious being because of which you exist. In the same way, Brahman, which is a reality because of which everything exists, is not a karta. It's not an agent, and not an agent of the act of creation. So, again, the philosophical understanding of this we could talk about for more time. I think it won't be helpful. Hopefully, you can just appreciate this little bit of an abstract principle that Brahman as pure existence is not the agent who created the universe. Then how did the universe exist? There must be another factor. And here I'll share with you a famous Vedantic equation, if there is such a thing. The famous Vedantic equation is the Brahman that we're talking about, the pure existence, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. This is the famous Vedantic equation. Brahman plus Maya is Ishvara. Ishvara is a more common term that we use to talk about the creator, sustainer, destroyer, srishtikarta. Karta, agent, the agent of srishti, of creation. Stitikarta, the agent of sustenance. Upasamharakarta, layakarta, the one who resolves the universe at the end of time. These are ways that we define Ishvara. In English, God. God creates the universe. Ishvara creates the universe. How does that God create the universe? Because that God, that Ishvara, is not merely pure existence. That Ishvara is endowed with Maya. Ishvara, endowed with Maya, is capable of creating the universe. Ishvara endowed with Maya is Paramesha Shaktihi. Maya here is referred to as Parama Isha. Isha, Ishvara. Parama Ishvara, Parameshvara. The Supreme God. Paramesha Shaktihi. The Shakti, the power of Paramesha. The power of Ishvara to create the universe is Maya. A helpful definition. There are so many definitions of Maya, most of which are not helpful. To translate Maya, Maya has different meanings in different contexts. Here we're talking about Maya strictly from the perspective of Advaita Vedanta. Maya, as understood in Advaita Vedanta, is not illusion. Maya, as understood in Advaita Vedanta, is not some magic or magical power. Maya, as understood in Advaita Vedanta, Shankara's Vedanta, is power of creation. Power of creation is the best way to describe it. And this is as it's used in Advaita Vedanta. So here, that power of creation means what? Shakti. Paramesha Shaktihi. That power of creation is wielded by Ishvara, and that Maya, that power of creation, is... I'm going to jump... There are very important terms in this verse. I'm going to jump around a little bit to try to make it more clear for you. What is the nature of that Shakti? What is the nature of that capacity for creation? And surprisingly, it's called Anadya Vidya. Anadi Avidya. Anadi, beginningless, Avidya, ignorance. And that may sound even stranger. Maya, the power of creation wielded by Ishvara, is Anadi Avidya, beginningless ignorance? And this has to do with Vedanta's way of understanding ignorance. And you'll get it very quickly. Ignorance is the most powerful thing in the cosmos. Huh? Ignorance is the most powerful? Absolutely. From a Vedantic sense, ignorance is more powerful than anything else. Can you name anything? If you wanted to transmute, as the ancients wanted to transmute lead into gold, can modern science do that? Even modern science can't do that, convert lead into gold. But ignorance is so powerful that if you take a piece of lead and paint it gold, due to ignorance, you think it's gold. It's ignorance that can turn lead, with the help of some paint, into gold. And the Vedantic example, which you've heard a million times, is imagine something so powerful that it could turn an ordinary piece of rope into a deadly snake. Wow. To turn an ordinary piece of rope into a deadly snake requires a tremendous power. avidya. Avidya is anadi, it's unborn, it's uncreated. After all, if it's Ishvara Shakti, it didn't get created. It's part of Ishvara. Ishvara is uncreated, so therefore Ishvara Shakti, Maya Shakti, is also uncreated and anadi. But this term avidya could really throw you until we understand avidya from the standpoint of Vedanta. And some of you will remember this from prior classes, where we've described avidya, ignorance, as having two shaktis, two kinds of power or capacity. One is avarana shakti, and the other is vikshepa shakti. Vikshepa. Avarana shakti, vikshepa shakti. Avarana means covering. Avarana shakti is a power to obscure or to conceal. With regard to our famous rope snake, the avarana shakti of avidya, of ignorance, covers up the rope, prevents you from recognizing the rope for being what it is. If you saw the rope, you wouldn't imagine it to be a snake in the first place. So the first part of that powerful transformation is the veiling of the rope. That is avarana shakti. Due to this veiling capacity, avarana shakti could be translated like that, veiling capacity. Due to the veiling capacity of avidya, the rope is obscured. Then, due to the vikshepa shakti, vikshepa means projecting. Due to the projecting capacity of ignorance, a snake is projected upon a rope. A snake is superimposed upon a rope. You can get the sense then that this avidya is incredibly powerful. There's no amount of scientific technology that can convert a rope into a deadly snake. But ignorance, avidya, is powerful enough, more than powerful enough, to convert that ordinary piece of rope into a deadly snake. And it does so by means of this avarana shakti, this veiling capacity, and vikshepa shakti, projecting capacity. Now, this verse says that this maya is that avidya, which means that maya also has these two. The point is not maya. To say maya is avidya is not exactly what the verse wants to say. What the verse does want us to understand is just as avidya has avarana vikshepa shakti, in the same way maya has avarana and vikshepa shakti. You with me? We're not saying maya equals avidya. That's not what the verse says. What the verse says is just as ignorance, avidya, has these two shaktis, in the same way maya has these two shaktis. How? Avarana shakti. Do you see Brahman? Show me some. Yet, the rishi said, sarvam kalvidam brahma, all this is nothing but Brahman. If all this is nothing but Brahman, why don't we experience as Brahman? Why don't we see it as Brahman? The existence of the universe, the nature of the universe as Brahman, that particular nature is obscured due to maya. And due to ignorance. Due to maya, the world exists out there. Due to ignorance, we don't understand that it's Brahman. Both are true. Due to maya, the Brahman out here is veiled. Due to ignorance, our understanding is veiled. Then, vikshepa shakti. All these names and forms superimposed on that one Brahman. Just as the metaphor that's given again and again, just as in the sea, one undifferentiated water appears in the form of so many waves and ripples and bubbles and foam and in all of these various ways. One undifferentiated water appearing with so many forms. That describes the Vikshepa Shakti. So Avarana Shakti, we're talking about Maya now. So with reference to Maya, the creative capacity by which Ishvara creates the universe, because Maya is a Shakti and has both of these Shaktis, therefore the Brahman, the reality, underlying reality is obscured, and the world of Nama Rupa, the world of names and forms, is projected due to the Vikshepa Shakti. All right. This is a very sophisticated topic, but it's a little unique that the Karana Sharira is introduced like this, but it works. And you'll see as we continue. Okay, let's continue. So we're still understanding what is Maya. We said Maya, which is Yaya, that by which Jagat Sarvamidam, this entire world, Prasuyate, is created. That Maya is Paramesha Shaktihi. That Maya is a power wielded by God. That Maya is Anadi Avidya, beginningless ignorance, which means that Maya has Avarana and Vikshepa Shakti, this veiling capacity and projecting capacity. Further, that Maya is Avyakta Namni. Namni, that which is called Avyakta. We've used that word before. Avyakta means unmanifest. And in particular, we're talking about the universe in an unmanifest condition. At the end of time, the universe returns to a seed state, a bija avastha, a potential state. So when Ishvara creates the universe, from the standpoint of Advaita Vedanta, very differently from the biblical view, in the biblical view, God creates from nothing. The Latin term for creatio ex nihilo, God creates out of nothing, from nothing. But in the Vedantic perspective, Ishvara causes the unmanifest universe to become manifest. That's what srishti means, that's what creation means. The unmanifest universe is caused to become manifest, then the manifest universe is sustained for some time, and then eventually the manifest universe is caused to become unmanifest. Srishti, sthiti, pralaya. Creation, sustenance, dissolution. All of this is caused by Ishvara. When the universe doesn't exist, it's not atyanta abhava, it's not absolute non-existence. The universe still exists in a what we call seed state. A bija avastha, it's a potential for the universe. The potential for the universe. That from which the universe came. Yaya jagadidam sarvam prasuyate. That by which the entire universe becomes manifest, that maya is the universe in an unmanifest condition. So maya is not just a shakti. A maya is a shakti, but maya is not only a shakti. Maya is also the universe itself in an unmanifest condition waiting to become manifest. That is the avyakta namni. And to finish up our verse, karya anumeya sudhiya eva. This is really profound stuff. Karya anumeya. Maya is anumeya. It is inferred karya from its effects. Karya anumeya is that which is inferred from its effects. For example, this table. This table is karya, it's an effect. From this effect, karya, called table, can we infer something about its cause? We can infer quite a bit about its cause. We can infer that it once came from a tree. We know that. Not only that, but trees don't spontaneously turn into tables, right? I've never seen a tree spontaneously turn into a table. So we presume then that there's some agent, some karta involved. Well, look at what we've inferred from the karya, from the effect. We have inferred quite a bit about the cause for the table. In the same way, this entire universe is karya, effect. So from this entire universe, we can infer. Anumeya means inference. We can infer a lot about the cause for the universe. Of course, in order to do that universe, you have to know, in order to infer something about the table, you have to know something about trees and something about carpentry, etc., etc. In the same way, to infer something about the cause for the universe, we have to know quite a bit. Therefore, it is karya anumeya sudhiya. It is inferred by sudhiya, by smart people. Sudhi means someone who has a good mind, a good intellect. Sudhiya, by those who have powerful minds, by them, this maya is karya anumeya. Is this maya can be inferred from the effect, which is the universe. So the rishis, inquiring deeply into the nature of the universe, they came to understand what is the cause for the universe. And one thing they understood, and just the last, by the way, we have just one last expression here to finish with. From the table, we infer that it came from trees, right? This table didn't come from rocks. This table didn't come from water. This table, we can infer, came originally from trees. Why? Because the wood that's in the tree is present in the table. So there's something from the cause that's present in the effect. For our more philosophically bent people, this is called Satkaryavada. You want to look that up. Satkaryavada means that the essence of the cause, something of the cause, is present in the effect. Now, here, when we look at the world, the table is made of wood. The world is made of three gunas. Right? That's our vision. Just as the table is made of wood, in the same way we can say the world is made of three gunas. The source of the table must have wood. The source of the world, which has three gunas, must have three gunas. Gunas come from gunas. From no gunas, you don't get gunas. So the source of this world which is trigunatmika, this world which is comprised of the three gunas, we can infer karya anumeya. We infer based on the world having three gunas, we infer that its source has three gunas. Therefore, maya is trigunatmika. Maya has three gunas. Maya consists of three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Maya, as the cause for the world, must be the source of the three gunas out of which the world is formed. And finally, this maya is para, beyond the world. In fact, we could even say little beyond comprehension. The next verse, which we'll see in our next class, we'll talk about how this maya is not just beyond the world. Para means beyond. Maya is not only beyond the world, maya is a little beyond comprehension. If you found this discussion very difficult, it is. This is one of the most perplexing topics in Advaita Vedanta. I could easily argue that understanding Atma or Brahman is easy compared to understanding Maya. And this part of the discussion we will see next class. In the next class, we will see the next verse, which deals with the fancy English word is inscrutability. How's that? Maya is inscrutable. Means what? You can't completely figure it out. And what we'll discover then is that this Maya, which is very hard to figure out, happens to be Karana Sharira. We have to come to that finally. So we have two verses left in this topic, and those are the two topics that we'll take up. One is the inscrutability of Maya, and then finally the relationship between Maya and this Karana Sharira. So we'll see that in our next class. I've been neglecting to make announcements in this class, and I think that's a mistake. I should be announcing, for example, that we have satsang on Sundays. And just this past Sunday, we had a very profound discussion, very much related to this class. In fact, many of the attendees are coming from this class. So we had a very important discussion on improper shravana and lack of nididhyasana as being major obstacles to having these profound Vedantic teachings really go in. I'm just bringing this to your attention because in addition to what we do here in this class format, your ability to ask questions is the process of asking questions is considered an important part of the process of spiritual growth. So if you like, please join us. Sundays at 6 p.m. is our satsang, and it's a smaller group, so you'll very much have plenty of access, opportunity to ask questions. And when we're dealing with such subject matter, questions are inevitable. And I do my best to anticipate all the questions, and hopefully I am, but not all the questions. You may have other questions, so please come for satsang. The other announcement I'm supposed to make is that this Saturday we have to have a particular celebration called Shashti Abda Purti. The completion of 60 years is an important religious observance. And here the situation is that the teachings in this ashram seem to depend quite a bit on this one, and this one should keep going. And the reason for the rituals of Shashti Abda Purti is to invoke God's blessing so that this one should keep going. So you're all welcome to come and join the program. It'll begin on Saturday, this coming Saturday. The rituals actually will start a little early. The priest asked for some more time. So we'll begin at 9:45. If you're particular about being there for the entire ritual, then please come at 9:45. And that'll be down in the dining hall. At 11:30, we'll come back up here, and the second part of the program will take place, so you're all invited to come for that program. Okay, we'll conclude with our prayer.